Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century.
All right, folks, we're back. It's 13 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. The phone number on this show is 1-888-822-TALK, 1-888-822-8255. And as promised, our special guest, again, he's been with us before, and he actually agreed to come back. Isn't that amazing? His name is Doug Stives. Doug is a CPA. He received his bachelor's degree in accounting and an MBA from Lehigh University. He started his accounting career with Price Waterhouse and joined the company he's with even as we speak, Kirchen & Company out of Red Bank, New Jersey. Doug is currently head of the tax department at Kirchen & Company, which is one of the largest CPA firms in central New Jersey. Doug is a frequent lecturer for several New Jersey organizations. He served as an instructor for various courses offered by the New Jersey Society of CPAs. He is a frequent lecturer and often quoted and interviewed on CNN and CNBC and several of the other major networks. He's been quoted frequently in New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and quite a few others. He works very closely with the International Association of CPAs, the AICPA, I should say, American Institute of CPAs, AICPA. Did I say that right, Doug?
American Institute of CPAs.
American right. Institute. There you go. Thank you, Doug. Welcome back.
Well, it's nice to be with you.
Well, you know, we're going to try something today, and I appreciate you being brave. Folks, this is a brave man because we're going to try to do something today that may have never been attempted in the history of radio, and that's to help small business owners understand a little bit better how to read their financial statements. Now, before we do that, though, Doug, I want to talk about financial statements in general, the overall concept of financial statements, because you know this and I know this, but there are a lot of people out there who might not believe this. There actually are small businesses that do not produce regular financial statements.
Oh, I would say a vast majority would fit into that category, Jim. I mean, we deal with hundreds of small businesses right here in our practice, and frankly, it's the exception that produces monthly or quarterly financial statements. I have people, I probably shouldn't admit it, but one of the reasons they come to see us is they don't even have a balanced checkbook, and they're running a business day to day.
Mercy.
Obviously, they're doing it by the seat of their pants. And that doesn't mean they're not successful either, but I think to start out is we're going to presume that a vast majority of people do not produce financial statements, or maybe the converse of that, they're producing financial statements that are absolutely worthless, and that leaves a very small minority of people who are getting anything that's worthwhile.
Exactly, and that's the reason why before we start reviewing how a financial statement works, I want to talk about a little bit about why these things are important. And why they're not important, they're critical, they're essential, they're mandatory. It's imperative. I can't use enough words to tell you how important it is that you have not only financial statements, but regular financial statements. Let me tell you a horror story. In my consulting business, a few years ago, I was asked to come out, to go out to a company and check and help them. They were people that I knew, and they needed some help. And when I got there, I asked them they told me about their problem, which is a serious problem, and I asked them for financial statements. And they sort of looked at me a little bit blank, and I said, I need to see how your business is running from a financial standpoint. So the lady was a husband and wife team. This was a business that had $3 million a year in sales, had been in business for 10 or 15 years. The lady left the conference room, went to the office, came back with their tax return. And she gave me that, and I said, okay, this is a tax return. I could use this, but where are your financial statements? And she said, well, it's in the back of that. She was talking about the balance sheet and operating statement that her CPA has to produce in order to finish their tax return.
Oh, that's only for a corporation, Jim.
That's
Excuse
right.
me for interrupting. But,
that's, no, I'm, thank you for pointing that out. This was a corporation, and I've forgotten whether it was a C or an S. I guess it was an S in those in that since it, in fact, it obviously would have been an S with having that return. I mean, that's that statement in the back of that return. But these people were in trouble, and it was obvious to me this was in the summer, which would have been 18 months after the first reporting period for the year that they were talking about. Talk about old information.
Well, that's exactly one of the problems. In fact, you know, just to take a slightly different tack than you're taking, Jim, is I get critical of some of the people in my own firm, as they'll bring your stuff in here in February or March, and sometimes we put their tax return on an extension, and you know, even as late as this time of year, we're producing 1997 tax returns, and it's the first time in many cases that people have had any kind of a summary or a financial statement for 1997. And with all due respect to people who depend on that, it's worthless at that point. You're looking at information that's 18 or 20 months old at this point.
That's exactly right. And so the point we're making here, folks, is if you want to manage your business properly, you've got to produce at least quarterly, if not monthly, statements. And Doug, I'd like to talk a little bit for a moment about the difference, how we would differentiate between you or I recommending someone produce a quarterly statement or a monthly statement.
Well, if someone is actually going to look at the monthly growth, what we suggest they do is invest in some software. And I've got to take a brief tangent and qualify that a little bit. There's software out there that's just great, but if the people running it don't really have any accounting skills, many times they have stuff just in wrong accounts and things that belong on the balance sheet, on the income statement, and vice versa. But with
garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah, but with a little guidance, hopefully, I'll advertise for 10 seconds, is hopefully from a competent CPA that is familiar with the type of business you're in, you can design a set of financial statements on some very basic software. You know, just to name one, is QuickBooks is the one that we use and very dependent on. There are others that are just as good, but you get that to the point where it's producing monthly financial statements for you, and also in the next column a year-to-date summary. And then once you get on this thing for at least a year, you produce comparative data from the prior year. Well, that gives you frequently on one sheet of paper really a snapshot that tells you where you were the last month, where you've been year-to-date, and where you stack up compared to the prior year. And that's a lot of valuable information.
In just a few seconds, you can track all that information, where you've been, where you are now, and it'll help you to tell you where you're going. And folks, we're going to take a break. It's 20 after the hour. Doug Stives is with us, and we're talking about financial statements, the importance of financial statements, regular, accurate financial statements, in the success of your small business. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, folks. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is Doug Stives. Doug is a CPA, and he is also a member of the Small Business Advocate Brain Trust. He's been with us before, and we're talking about accounting issues for your small business, and we've been talking about financial statements. And, Doug, when we took the last break, we were about to get into whether you should do quarterly or monthly financial statements, and the one thing that I say is, and I'm going to let you tell the audience which way you should be going, which industry, or whether you should be doing monthly or quarterly. But the main thing I want to say is, regardless of whether it's monthly or quarterly, make sure that you got those numbers in your hands no later than the end of the following month, following that reporting period.
Well, clearly, I mean, if I have to vote for quarterly or monthly, Jim, I'll go for the monthly.
Right.
A little bit of self-serving, because this is what we do for a living. But my point is old information is just not worth a whole lot of money. And if you opt for quarterly, right now we're in the third quarter, which means you won't have any idea until after September 30th how you're doing right now.
Right. But there are industries, there are companies that are out there who they're because of the way they do business, because of the number of transactions that they have, because of the size of their business, that it's not all that bad if they're not likely to do monthly. So that's the reason I sort of give them a little bit of a break.
Sure. Well, the traditional client that comes into our firm that isn't computerized yet is bringing their stuff in here once a quarter with their payroll taxes and their sales tax. And at the same time, they bring us, in some cases, something as basic as their check stubs and their bank statements, and we feed that into our computer and crank out a quarterly financial statement. But I have to emphasize a second time, that's old information.
Mm-hmm.
It's infinitely better than waiting until the end of the year to find out how you're doing.
Right.
And frankly, it's better than a self-prepared monthly that's not right.
Right, exactly. But if you're just starting your business, folks, if you've got a brand new business that's a few months old or a year or so old, it's a service business, it's a small service business like a consulting company or something like that, you don't have that many transactions. You don't have a lot of inventory. Wouldn't you agree, Doug? Those are businesses that can get away with quarterly pretty well.
Pretty much, yeah. And also, you know, service businesses like my own. I mean, you know, we kind of look at the checkbook and can tell you how we're doing.
One thing to make sure, though, we point out, though, Doug, this is not about waiting to the end of the quarter to do record keeping, to do the entries.
Well, no. In fact, we can drive that home by what we advise for, you know, anything other than a one-man show. I mean, if you're the only person in your business and you're paying the bills and taking the deposits to the banks and writing the checks, well, then you don't need to do what I'm going to suggest. But the minute you're out of the loop a little bit, I mean, to be specific, can talk to professionals. If you're a physician or a dentist or whatever you might be, what we'd like people to do, whoever is doing the bookkeeping, should, you're not going to believe this, but every day put one sheet of paper on the owner's desk, tell him what his receivables are, tell him what his deposit was the day before, what his cash balance is, and what his outstanding bills, his accounts payable are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes substantially beyond that. But three or four numbers, just nothing else that makes you aware that your bookkeeper is up to date.
Right. And you recommend that every day?
On the ideal situation, yes.
And at least once a week?
As a bare minimum.
Yeah.
Because the first way to throw a business into a tailspin is the bookkeeper comes in and says, Jim, we can't make payroll this week.
Right, exactly.
And then what do?
Right.
You stop everything else and lose business because you're trying to do something that should have been done a couple of weeks ago.
Fighting fires, exactly. Yeah, that's the most important thing, is to do something a little bit every day. And one of the things about these new computer programs, they're not all that new, these accounting programs, is that you can actually write checks off of them. So instead of writing a check out of a checkbook, you can put your information, set your information up on your computer so that you can write a check, stick the blank check that you can order. We do that here. You can stick that into your printer, and when you write that check, then that makes a lot of transactions in your accounting package, doesn't it?
Oh, well, the beauty of that is some people say, well, heck, I don't write too many checks, and by the time I load those checks into my printer and all those things, it doesn't make sense, but let me tell the other side of the story, is that you're punching the information in once.
Right.
Being posted to your general ledger, it keeps track of your cash balance. I mean, you know, if you're going to handwrite a check and then turn to your computer, you're doing it twice.
That's right. And once you get used to it, folks, and it's not that hard, and if you need to know how to order those checks, let me know, because we do that here, and I'll make sure you get that information. Doug, we got to take a break. We're coming up on the end of this segment. It's 29 after the hour, folks. When we come back, we're actually going to try... We actually are going to help you understand your balance sheet and your operating statement. Stay with us. I'll be right back. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is Doug Stives. Stay with us. All right, welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My special guest is Doug Stives. He's a CPA with the accounting firm of Kirchen & Company out of Red Bank, New Jersey. And Doug... give your number out in case anyone would like to contact you.
Sure. My office telephone number is 732, area code 732-747-0500. And I'm around most of the time at this time of year, and if somebody has a problem or a question and we can help, or very importantly, realizing that most people are in different parts of the country, we'd be delighted to give you a second opinion. Or for that matter, a referral to somebody that I might know in your area. So if we can help, give me a buzz.
That's the main thing that I wanted you to give that number out for, folks. I wanted Doug to give that number out for. If you have a question, just a simple question about your small business, Doug is here now, and we have a toll-free number available to you, and we'll stop what we're doing. If you have a question, we'll stop what we're doing, and we'll talk to you. 1-888-822-TALK. 1-888-822-8255. The good news, folks, is that Doug has agreed to join the Small Business Advocate Brain Trust, and that means he's going to be with us on a fairly regular basis to talk about these issues. I want you to get to know him a little bit, and as you can tell, he knows what he's talking about. Doug?
How would they guess that? I'm just reading what you told me to read here, Jim.
Well, you read well. folks, we're going to try the never-before-tried-before. Now we're going to get into helping you understand your financial statements. We're going to start with a balance sheet.
Wait a minute. I thought we were going to tell them how they didn't have to pay any income tax.
That's for another show.
Oh, that's next week.
That's so. Another show. That's right. By the way, did you know that on this day in 1846, Henry David Thoreau was jailed for tax resistance?
Oh, I see. I knew that's why we were going to touch that tax evasion today.
All right, let's get back into this, folks. And I want to point out to you, you can't see this, but for the next two segments, Doug is going to be working without a net. All right, Doug, go for it. Let's talk about balance sheets. What is a balance sheet?
Well, to get into the overview of what we're talking about here is something called financial statements. And I realize some people say, yeah, we know what that is, but we're really going to start with people who say, what in the dickens is a financial statement? Mm-hmm. There are a series of financial statements. If you get a set of financial statements from a company that you own stock in, you go in there and you look in an annual report, and you'll see first staring at you something called the balance sheet, or the statement of assets and liabilities, mm-hmm. what is sometimes referred to in some types of companies. And what this does is it lists on the left-hand side, or what we call the debit side of the balance sheet, all of your assets. Starts out with cash, and what that tells you is you start with the most liquid items, the items that you can convert to cash, come right underneath cash, marketable securities, and then you go to accounts receivable. The theory being there is that it's supposed to be converted to cash in relatively short order. You drop down to inventory, and stop there for a minute, Jim, because what a lot of people fail to realize, they add up all the assets on the balance sheet and say, well, this is what this company has in total assets. Not necessarily, because just starting with inventory, you frequently carry a number there that has a relation, but not an exact number as to what really is the dollar value of the inventory that the company owns on the balance sheet date.
Mm-hmm.
You get into what we call your fixed assets, your tangible assets, your equipment, your buildings, your furniture and fixtures, land that the company might own, whatever it is, and we, by definition, carry those items at the purchase price, not the fair market value.
Mm-hmm.
In some financial reports, yes, the fair market value is noted, but when you're conforming with what are known as generally accepted accounting principles, or GAAP as we affectionately call it,
mm-hmm.
You use historical cost, not market value. And you go on down that left-hand side of the balance sheet without going into a great deal of detail, and you finally come up with total assets. And
let me interrupt you, Doug.
Sure.
One second. Below the listing of those fixed assets is also the depreciation.
Right. Yes. Okay.
Remember that you've got to net that out.
Right. Exactly. In other words, go back to my buildings and furniture and equipment and things like that. As most people probably realize, you're allowed to depreciate or take a portion of the purchase price of those items and offset that against the cost purchase price. And once again, you at that point have left any realm of determining what market value is. You're just really, right. At that point, bean counting. I hate that term, but I just used it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you used it, not me, because you would have wrapped me on the knuckles if I'd have used that word.
Yeah, and you know, there's nothing terribly magical about it, but you wind up with what we call the net book value of the fixed assets or the tangible assets. And
right.
That number is close to meaningless. It's just you're keeping score is all you're doing.
Exactly, and I'd like to point one thing out. This is a section that you just don't want to get all hung up about, because that fixed asset section with the netting out of the depreciation is not going to make you happy, because at some point in time you're going to see that if you own your building in your business, which I recommend typically that you don't, if you don't own your real estate inside your corporation, but you're going to see an asset there that's listed or something that's listed there, and then over a period of time you're going to see that net fixed asset number is very, very low, and you know your assets are worth more than that. Just don't get hung up on that. That's not important.
Right. And the other side of it is if you have computer equipment that you've capitalized, you went out and spent $50,000 on computer equipment, as most people understand, that stuff is almost worthless 6 months into it.
Or 3 months.
And you're depreciating it over 5 years or something like that. So it goes both ways.
Exactly. All right, folks, we've got to take a break. Doug's going to stay with us a little bit longer. It's 39 after the hour. We're just covering the asset side of your balance sheet. And so far, we haven't needed the net. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us. All right, we're back, folks. It's 44 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is Doug Stives. He's a CPA with the accounting firm of Kirchen & Company out of Red Bank, New Jersey. And Doug has been with us before. We're talking about how to understand your financial statements. And what we're doing, we started with a balance sheet. And we're just going through this, folks. We're not going to get to the end of this today. We're going to Doug will be back in the weeks ahead to talk about, to continue to discuss the various components of your financial statements. And so we're talking about the asset side of your balance sheet right now. A minute ago, Doug said that the assets would be on the left and the liabilities and equity would be on the right. Sometimes you'll see that where the assets are on top, the liabilities are on the bottom. Sometimes you'll see where the assets are on one page, the liabilities are on another page. So you'll see it a lot of different ways when you open up a financial statement. Doug, one of the things I want to talk about, when we took the last break, just before we took the last break, we had gotten down to where we were ready to add up the current assets and the fixed assets. And that gives us the bottom, the total assets on the balance sheet.
There might be some other assets too, Jim.
Okay, what are those?
Well, one that confuses the heck out of people is something called goodwill. If you went out and bought a company that was up and running before you got involved with it, your accountant probably put some kind of a number in there that may have confused you. It's called goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is, that's the intangible value of what you paid in excess of what the book value of the tangible equipment and whatever other receivables, inventory, and so forth you may have purchased. Other types of intangibles might be listed there if you have a patent or a copyright or something like that that you're amortizing or sometimes mm-hmm. not amortizing over the useful life of that particular intangible asset.
What are you doing with the goodwill? What's happening to it on that balance sheet?
Well, we were all taught in school that you cannot amortize goodwill, but then the IRS and their infinite wisdom, actually Congress a couple of years ago, decided that if you purchase goodwill or an intangible in a business, you now can amortize that or spread it out and take a tax deduction for it over 15 years.
Well, that's just such a more practical way to deal with it than you used to deal with it, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's one of the few things that, I shouldn't say that, it's one of the many things that there are others we're still wishing Congress would do to bring tax law into reality. But yeah, it was a good move. We were delighted about it.
Well, because in the old days, I remember, you always have goodwill. I mean, almost always have goodwill when you buy a company, and you wound up jury rigging the assets to move up that number around. Didn't you?
I'll never admit to that, but I know some people that did. That.
I've heard of that happening. I read somewhere where that happened once.
Right. Just one point before we leave that area, Jim, is if you started your own company, you don't have goodwill on your financial statement.
Right.
I get people come in here and say, well, now, Doug, I've been running this business for 20 years, and I understand my business is worth a couple of $1 million, so I want to show goodwill. Nope, you can't do that unless you bought it from somebody else.
That's right. I want to go back up. And folks, as I think I said earlier, if we don't get into, you know, we're not going to get all the way through this thing today, but I want to spend a little bit more time on the asset side of your balance sheet. Doug, I want to go back up to the current assets for a minute and talk about a couple of things. One is cash. You can have more than one cash account, can't you?
Oh, sure.
And that would be because you have more than one checking account.
Yep. And
or a savings account.
Yeah, for a small business, what we would generally do there is list each individual account. You know, if you've got 30 accounts, well, then on the actual balance sheet that you're going to publish for your bank or whatever, you might lump those together.
Be cash 1, 2, 3, that sort of thing, right on down the line.
Yes.
All right, let's talk, and you could actually have more than one accounts receivable account too, couldn't you?
Oh, sure, yeah. You know, you have different departments, or you know, you can break these things out in as much detail as you like. What I traditionally tend to do in my own firm here is to keep the balance sheet limited to a page and, you know, consolidate accounts and have schedules behind them if detail is going to be useful to the reader.
Another thing that you'll see in that current asset column is notes receivable.
Yeah.
From, for example, notes receivable from shareholders.
Yes, or if you've sold part of your business and you're collecting a note from somebody that purchased whatever, you know, a building
right.
or something from the business.
Right. The goodwill that they bought from you that's over on their balance sheet is on your side, perhaps, in the form of a note receivable.
Exactly.
Another thing that you often see, or that I think you often see, I want to get your opinion on this. I think that if you have inventory, you should be providing something that we used to call back in my old retail days, stock loss reserve, some kind of inventory reserve, so that when you're projecting a profit or loss, whatever you're doing on your operating statement, when you take your inventory at the end of the year, if you haven't allowed for reserve, for shrinkage, for theft, for some kind of shrinkage, then you're probably going to be disappointed in your bottom line. If you've gone all year long and you think you've made a profit, and all of a sudden your warehouseman or whoever does your inventory comes back and tells you you got about 20,000 less inventory than you thought you did. I think you should be providing a reserve. What do you think, Doug?
Absolutely. A little bit of an update on that is the accounting profession kind of frowns on the term reserve anymore. So what we're supposed to do and what we generally do with the retailers that we handle is actually take a deduction on a monthly or a quarterly basis. We're jumping ahead, but over on your income statement, you would take a deduction for stock loss, and then you would just reduce the inventory on a monthly basis. Now, you're guessing at that point, and generally you'd be basing it on what kind of a loss you've experienced in prior years.
Right. It could be a couple of $100 a month. It could be $1,000 a month. It could be $50 a month. Some total number divided by 12, and that will keep you from surprising yourself at the end of the year. All right, folks, it's 50 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassing again, the Small Business Advocate. Doug Stives is our special guest, and we're still working with Annette talking about your financial statements. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, folks, it's 54 after the hour. We're back with Doug Stives. He's our special guest on the Small Business Advocate Show. I'm Jim Blassingame, and we're talking about accounting and bookkeeping and primarily, though, this hour, your financial statements. We've been talking about the balance sheet, and Doug and I have just been having so much fun with this, and I know you are, too. And, you know, Doug, a lot of people wouldn't have the courage to tackle something like this on the radio.
Well, I think we need to congratulate anybody that's still listening that started with us 40 minutes ago, because, you know, you tell somebody when you get to work that I listened to some CPA from New Jersey explain a balance sheet, they're going to wonder if you're all right.
Yeah. They're going to say, you need to get out more, aren't they?
Yeah, right.
Don't you have a life?
Particularly on a sunny Friday.
But, you know, the truth is, I know small business owners, and you do too. And what I know about small business owners is that they're not likely to go to their CPA and say, and I'm afraid that CPAs may not be likely to do this either, to say, sit down and tell me what this page means.
Well, that's one of the problems with our profession is we never really take the time to explain what in the heck it is that we're given to you. And frankly, I criticize some businessmen because they don't take us on and say, Doug, I don't understand what this is you gave me. Let's go through it line by line.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, that's what I admire about you, Doug. You're a good teacher. And I mean that sincerely. That's a real compliment for me. I wanted to say that to you because I know a lot of CPAs. I know a lot of great CPAs. They're excellent at what they do. They're excellent technicians, and they're wonderful people, but they couldn't teach what you've been doing today. They could not do that, and that's the reason why I was so fortunate, I feel, we're fortunate, that the AICPA, the people that I called and asked them to help me with this, put us on to you, and I really appreciate that. Doug,
because I'd rather do this than work.
I understand. Okay, folks, we've been talking about the balance sheet. We've been talking about the asset side of the balance sheet. When Doug, one of the things that I want to point out, Doug, a lot of people would look at the asset side of the balance sheet, and they look down there and they see that the company's worth $1.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't know what they were doing, they say, wow, this company's worth $1.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not true, is it?
No, not at all. If we've made no other point this hour, Jim, is the numbers on the balance sheet, even when we get into a later show over on the other side with the net worth item, that does not in any way indicate what the value or the worth of that company is. It's a scorecard. It's all it is.
Yeah. And the game's not over.
I mean, your cash balance, the first number on the balance sheet, that's a real number. That's what you had at the date of the balance sheet.
Right.
But that then, you know, if the number's right, but when you carry your, what we talked about earlier, your tangible assets or your goodwill or some of those other mysterious asset numbers, that does not mean that's what those items would be sold for.
That's exactly right. The balance sheet is a cross-section of your business at a moment in time.
Well, I always call it a snapshot.
Yep. And literally, that's a better way to say it. And literally, at a moment in time, it's important. It's important information that you need. And when someone is evaluating your business, a banker, an investor, or a purchaser, somebody that's going to buy your business, the balance sheet is very important, especially a current balance sheet.
Well, it's the starting point.
Right.
We've emphasized is it doesn't mean the value, and people say, well, then why do you do it? Well, it's a starting point. Then you're going to go through a banker, somebody evaluating your company, or somebody looking to buy your business, is going to start with those numbers and then adjust them to reality, if you will.
Exactly. All right, folks. Doug, we got to wrap it up. We're coming up on the end of the hour. You've just absolutely done a great job. I'm so glad to know that we haven't had any body parts or anything. Nobody got hurt. We have not needed the net today. You've just done a great job, and I know my audience appreciates it. Thank you very much, and I'm looking forward to our next visit.
Well, you have a good weekend.
Okay, thank you, sir. All right, folks, it's 58 after the hour. Got to wrap it up. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.